Welcome to another episode of the Taxpayers Union MPs in Depth. This week we've got Laura Trask from the ACT Party with us, and I suppose we'll just jump right into it, Laura. How are you finding things?
Well, that's a very good question. Look, I've been around Parliament now for a couple of months, I guess you could say. Things are going very well. It's extremely busy building. Yeah, look, I think I'm settling in well.
Yeah.
Best way to put it.
Yeah. Well, the government's certainly been hitting the ground running. You've had a lot of priorities over the 100 days, and you've been hitting a lot of those. And from our perspective, particularly this week with Three Waters being repealed, as the Taxpayers Union, we were obviously very happy with that. You must be quite happy with some of the progress being made.
We are absolutely stoked with the progress that's been made, and definitely some of the repeals of the legislation that was extremely important to our voter base and just the public in general. So I think,
absolutely.
I'm not really more happy with how things are going.
And given how hectic it was or is currently for you, and that you've only been an MP for a few months, was this a particularly expected journey? Because I think I recall you saying somewhere that you were sort of umming and ahhing about standing for Parliament. You obviously have done. You've won. I mean, what a change to your life this has been. How have you managed to adapt?
Yeah, look, it was a very unexpected rise into politics, I guess you would say. I sort of got involved with the ACT Party after the last election. Was really unhappy with the way that the country was moving, and really concerned. I'm a mum, I've got two young kids. Mm. Also, being a small business owner, I think I felt the pressures of the climate that was, we're going to say,
yep.
Current. and look, I think that, that really moved me or motivated me to get involved with the ACT Party. I didn't think that I'd be putting my hand up to stand as Parliament, Member of Parliament, but so have it. I was asked to, and more than grateful to help out. And it's absolutely wonderful that I now am in a position to represent the ACT Party.
Yeah, absolutely. And in a beautiful part of New Zealand as well.
Exactly. Absolutely. And look, it has been a little bit of an adjustment. I have gone from being basically my own director and getting our business to quite a comfortable position and managing family life balance pretty well. And coming into Parliament, that's quite a tricky balance.
Well, this is it. I mean, one of the many sacrifices is bound to be a level of privacy that you otherwise would have enjoyed. But alongside the fact that you were building a successful business for yourself, that must have been a hell of a decision. I mean, you must have been beyond motivated to allow yourself to be going forward and standing.
Yeah, 100%. There is definitely a lot of motivation there. We'll see how things go.
I mean... Not many people are prepared to stand for Parliament. You must have been a fairly political person throughout your life. I remember in your speech you were talking about some hearty discussions around the dinner table growing up. Presumably that influenced you. Was it always a political household? Were you always involved?
I guess I wouldn't say my family followed politics completely. I wouldn't say that political nerds a few of my colleagues.
I won't ask.
But politics was something that was openly discussed, and it was always openly debated because there was quite differing views within the family unit, which in some ways, as growing up as a child, it gave me the opportunity to shape my own opinions because I was actually seeing both sides, which was quite nice. Mm. And then journeying through life, always had that kind of friend circle where we discuss politics, got friends from right across the political spectrum, and I've always enjoyed those debates and topics of discussion around a few drinks.
Yeah.
And so, I would say that I've always played an active interest in politics, and it was something when I first left high school I was really keen on. Originally I was studying for a BA in political science and mass comms, so I wouldn't say that it was potentially a career prospect at the time, but it was definitely an interest.
Yeah.
It was just, I wasn't sure how that would translate into the real world.
That was another interesting thing I picked up. You, in your first bachelor's, you mentioned it was more like a bachelor of socialising.
100%.
What did you mean by that?
Well, while I was doing well at university, I was definitely more focused on the social aspect. I would say I was your classic end high school. What am I going to do next? I possibly should have taken a gap year.
Yeah.
Instead, went off to university, moved into a flat of four girls, 18-year-olds. We had a lot of fun. That's the best way to put it. And I guess the subject areas that I was studying were more areas of interest. They weren't clear paths to a career that I wanted to work in. I didn't want to work in journalism. I didn't want to be a politician.
Yeah.
The irony. but those weren't, I guess, the goals I had. And so I think you'll probably note that I had an accident, which took me out of university for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
And it kind of gave me the opportunity to reassess, why am I here? What am I doing?
Yeah.
You know, where will this lead to? Will I just have a BA and, you know, follow on from that? And,
I think that resonates quite a lot. I mean, certainly my own journey was very similar to that. And I never finished university. I dropped out because I realised I was basically wasting my time. I'm sure it's the case for so many young people across much of the Western world and obviously here in New Zealand as well. I mean, do you think there's a problem with that, that people are going to university not with a clear purpose in mind, but rather out of a perhaps misguided sense of need?
Yeah, look, I don't know if it's a problem as such. I think what I hope for my children is that if they are going to invest in education and spend a lot of money on a student loan, which I'm still paying off and I am 38, so we can see how much I possibly spend on a student loan, that they do have a clear career path end goal. And I think there are a lot of degrees and qualifications out there that often, while the subject matter is really interesting, you may be, and you know, it may be worth investing in that. I would like to see a lot more, I guess, education at the end of that high school around what you want to do with your life, where you want to go. I mean, everything changes between that 18 to 25.
Absolutely.
As you know, so yeah. Could probably be a bigger advocate for the gap year.
Why not? I mean, plenty do it.
Yeah, definitely.
And in terms of your career, you then went on into the pharmaceutical industry. Would you like to talk a bit about that? What made you decide on that? Because that's quite a change from your original BA, wasn't it?
So the change happened, I was actually working part-time as like a shop assistant within a pharmacy when I first had my accident. And then going back to work, talking to some of the staff there, the pharmacy owner, about kind of like some of the roles and positions, I sort of was really interested in the science-y aspect. I've always been quite keen on science. I really enjoyed it at high school. It was one of those things that when I was deciding about what to do at university, a Bachelor of Science kind of came up. So health science is something that's always been interested in, and I kind of thought, right, like, what will I do next? And I was looking at the options between becoming a pharmacy technician or a pharmacist, and the technician qualifications only 2 years as opposed to doing a pharmacist degree. And there's also pathways from technician to pharmacist while you're working, which was quite unique. And financially, the techs get paid reasonably well for the work.
So Okay,
this seems like a good option for me. Let's go off and do that. And I really enjoyed working within community pharmacy. I think it was possibly what's shaped a lot of my ideology.
Yeah.
It's made me a more all-rounded person. It definitely given me the experience in dealing with all kinds of different people from different socioeconomical spectrums. Yeah.
I mean, you just brought up ideology there. What is your sort of overarching ideology? We all know roughly what ACT stands for, but presumably there must be a lot of crossover.
There is definitely a lot of crossover. And I mean, like, I'm with the Libertarian Party, so I'm all for more of the personal responsibility, free markets, less tax.
I think it's fair to say you don't like red tape as well.
I 100%
that,
do not
that
like
came red across tape. In the maiden speech.
100%. But I guess when we think about traditionally libertarian parties are against social welfare, for example. And I would say I'm not completely, in the sense that I think there are times in a person's life where they're unable to control the circumstances. They may need a hand up. I would prefer to see the system more targeted that way, a hand up rather than the hand out.
Yeah, yeah.
And making sure we've got really good systems in place to get people actually into the workforce and get them living their best productive lives, because overall happiness is very closely linked to working.
Yeah, absolutely. And presumably these are the views you espoused on the campaign trail, and obviously must have resonated with plenty of people. What was the campaign like? Was this your first proper...
This is my first campaign. Before this, I'd obviously never done anything with politics.
Well, it's not a bad win rate, 100%.
Very, very fortunate. I loved the campaign and I loved rural New Zealand. Mm. So prior to campaigning, my farming knowledge, I would say, was limited. My grandparents were dairy farmers in the UK. So while they were over there, we kind of grew up in New Zealand, suburban New Zealand. So didn't spend a lot of time on a farm, but my father had like a, I would say, a love affair with everything dairy farming. So as a child, I would drive past a bunch of cows. I'd be sitting down here, be like, oh, those freezers, no, it's going to rain. Like, just crazy, silly stuff like that.
So you could take the kid out of the dairy farm, but you can't take...
So when we were on the road, we saw a lot of our rural communities who have felt the burden of regulation, possibly the most out of every sector, I would say. A lot of sectors have suffered with regulation, but them more so than anyone else. Mm. And so it was really like humbling talking to these people and getting to know them, getting to know their priorities. And it was also, you know, like it was a huge eye-opener into how farming actually contributes, obviously, to our economy, but the way in which our farmers are portrayed as being, you know, poor, anti the environment. And these people could not be closer to the environment. They live on this land. Their interests are so closely linked with
and their investment. A lot of the time it's their own money that they're pouring into this.
They if there are things that they can do within their means in their farm, they will do it. They don't need the regulations and rules around it to force their hand or to hire expensive consultants to tell them exactly what it is. And you know, they just really need to get on with things.
Absolutely. So you say that you grew up sort of suburban. You were Christchurch born and raised, was that?
Yeah, Christchurch born and raised. I've lived in some of our other cities here in New Zealand as well, but spent most of my time, I'd say, in Christchurch. And stint after the Christchurch earthquakes, I moved to Wellington for 3 years, and then I moved to Auckland for 6, and then back to Christchurch in 2019.
So you've been about. and that's presumably where you based your family and set your life, essentially. Yeah. How often are you able to get back there now that you're an MP? Presumably once a week, you're heading back and...
Back to Christchurch?
Yeah.
So I come up on a Monday evening, head back Thursday night. So it's not too bad. Just depends on our workload, and then if there's various events around the country, try and get out to those as well. But yeah, I would say 50-50 split time between Christchurch and...
I think it's, just to change tack slightly, I think it's fairly clear that you're not squeamish of a political battle, perhaps. You showed certainly your sense of humour in your maiden speech when you said your colleagues are politically to the left when you were referring to working in your mother's hair salon. I thought that was quite a funny line. But nonetheless, you seem like an MP that's ready to have these sort of battles with your ideological opponents, for want of a better phrase. Are you going to be taking the fight to red tape and to people that disagree?
100%. 100%. I'm here and I'm ready for that fight. So.
And you also mentioned the quote from The Merchant of Venice, "All that glitters is not gold." And that came up a few times throughout your main speech. You might even argue it was the theme of it. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure whether in places that was, perhaps you can... offer some insight into whether that was being clear-sighted or cynical about certain aspects of life and politics.
And look, you may be right, a little bit of both in some sense. For me, when I going through my political journey or going through life and maturing and owning a business and working within health and safety, I feel that while governments have the best intentions, and I do believe even the opposition have good intentions. I do believe that all politicians do have good, they are well intended, but it's often it's often the unintended consequences that are just not considered. And I feel that that has become so true of so many things within the previous 6 years, especially of the past government. And so as it became, I guess, a bit of a theme to my speech, it was more around, you know, what would gold be and how would we shape that?
Mm. Yeah. It's interesting that you mentioned the unintended, I can't remember if you said victims just then, but I think in your speech you did it the other way around and you were talking about the unintended winners of a lot of regulation and red tape.
Yeah, and that is something that we don't always see, or I think as well that potentially the left don't notice is occurring. One example that I will give would probably be, I would say, possibly like the fishing industry.
Yeah.
We see during the campaign, I went and saw a fisherman. He has like a 10-man operation down south. And because of the rules and regulations and the amount of equipment he's had to install, like cameras and all kinds of bits of things, returning bycatch to shore, it's just not viable for him to carry on. And the bigger names are able to basically absorb some of that cost, and they can get away with it. So when I, as much as I love capitalism and growth, and I just think when we, with the rules and regulations, we don't keep that market competitive enough.
No, I mean, it was music to my ears. It was almost reminiscent of some of the arguments we made around Brexit back in the day. but it, again, it added to that sort of pugnacious feeling that I got from this speech, that you're absolutely there, ready for this fight. It's presumably red tape and regulation is absolutely up there as one of your priorities that you've got to get rid.
I would say it's up there. When I found out that David was going to be the Minister of Regulation, we're getting over the line. That was possibly one of the most exciting times in my life this far.
I can see in your face, viewers won't be able, or listeners won't be able to see, but I can see the excitement.
No, it is genuinely exciting. And I think a lot of Kiwi, especially business owners, will understand where I'm coming from when I say that to be more productive, to be more profitable, to have even a good idea and get it off the ground, we need to have sensible regulation. I don't mean none, I just mean sensible.
Yep. Yeah. Important distinction.
It's very interesting.
And I mean, that's obviously one of the priorities. Presumably, you'll be looking at the pharmaceutical regulations and the industry going forward as well, given your background in that, as well as health and safety. Mm-hmm. Are those other priorities of yours? Where do you see those sort of industries developing in future, and how can government help?
Yeah, look, some of those things are really important. It's not on my priority list because we also have Todd Stevenson, who's coming in with a lot of experience.
He'd spent about 20 years, hadn't he?
Yeah, he is, but I do think that having the both of us there will enable us to come up with some pretty good policy ideas and decision making when it comes to PharmAc. I mean, the whole thing really needs a reform. It's just, where do you start?
Yes. There's certainly a lot of work to be done there. Yeah. You also mentioned that you'd voted for all sorts of parties, but you hadn't voted for the Green Party in the past. Is that correct? Why are they the ones that you haven't voted for?
Look, when I was a young voter...
I'm not trying to start a fight here with your new colleagues.
Look, they're all good. When I was a first-time voter, I guess I was looking at the principles and policies of parties, which a lot of people don't do. A lot of young 18-year-old voters come in and they often vote which way their family or their parent votes. Politics is often not the top on their priority list. If it is, you're quite often in the green voter carrier category. but honestly, at the time, whilst I did like some of their environment policies, because I'd say that I am an environmentalist, I do care a lot about our environment. Something that's actually really important to me, and I did not mention it in the speech, but it is extremely important to me. It's the social policies that don't align at all with my values. And I mean, a lot of these green policies, you need money. You need money to implement them. And New Zealand doesn't have the wealth of some of our countries that we like to compare ourselves to, i.e. Norway. So I think that was a huge thing. And I mean, at that time I actually voted Labour because I wanted an interest-free student loan. And, you know, looking back on that, I don't know whether that was such a great decision. But as an 18-year-old, I still stand by the fact that I voted for what was good for me at the time.
No, and, good for you. At the very least, you made a sort of an understandable decision rather than just a sort of passive, it's expected of me to vote for X.
Yeah.
So how long have you been with ACT then in terms of your voting record?
Voting the last two cycles, so 6 or so years. ACT really, I always liked a lot of the ACT values, the libertarian values. Mm. There were some policies that were kind of that right, more right-winged, that probably didn't align with my values at the time.
Mm.
But when they brought forward end-of-life choice, that was something for me at the time was really important. I had a cousin who had breast cancer, and she was actually the same age I am now, so she was 38.
Blimey.
And she unfortunately became terminal. And a big worry or fear of hers, and it consumed a lot, I would say a lot of her time, was worrying about, will she be in pain when she dies? How is that going to be? And end-of-life choice was coming up, similar sort of time. So it got me to really look at ACT and David and what the party was doing. And so from there on, that kind of, I guess, triggered a whole series of,
so it was
personal value alignment with the ACT party and being a business owner as well. It just,
It was a deeply personal sort of transition.
Yeah.
I will move on to the sort of fun questions, if you like. These are the ones that certainly are important to the Taxpayers Union. What is your least favourite tax and why?
Ooh, my least favourite tax. Well, it would be a wealth tax. Thankfully, we don't. But I feel like it's always looming, right?
Compared to what it's used to in the UK tax system, I think you guys have got a pretty good setup.
You might get more value for your money. But yes, you're correct. My least favourite tax possibly be the higher tax bracket, because I feel like those settings really disadvantage anybody trying to get ahead. To do well is extremely hard in New Zealand, because we've got high costs of living already, and to be taxed higher is also prohibiting young Kiwis from getting on the property ladder, for example. I guess there's no real incentive to keep growing and keep doing better within your roles to aim for higher income. So at the moment, that would probably be, there'd be something, the tax bracket that I probably least.
Fair enough.
Least like, yeah.
And what is the most outrageous example of either local or central government waste that you can think of that really made you angry?
Oh my gosh, there's so
many. I know, there's so many. You are spoilt for choice, to be fair.
The Ministry of Pacific Peoples Farewell, that was up there.
That's the one that seems to come up the
most.
It was
quite exorbitant, but I'm going to give a more... I'm going to give an example that sits right outside this building, and that would be the slide.
Yes.
And I actually...
Amazingly, no one's brought that up.
If anyone wants to follow me on social media, I'm making a little bit of a behind-the-scenes series here on different things around Parliament that you just don't see. So it's like a behind-the-scenes. Mm. And I talk about that slide and the value that went into it. So, it was extremely wasteful spending.
Yep.
But there are so many areas, and I think as a taxpayer, we just deserve so much better. Yeah, we really do.
Tell me about it. I mean, it was my job, or it is my job, rather, to investigate all of the government waste. So a lot of our stories that come out come across my desk, and after 10 minutes of calming down, then you can get around to looking at it.
I did not envy you something. Yeah. Like.
Well, put it this way, it's not difficult.
No.
I'm hoping you guys might make it more difficult.
I hope so too. I really do.
And is there a government policy or programme from the last 6 years that you secretly admire?
Ooh. I am actually going to go with the Defence Force pay increase. Because, I mean, like ACT, we think there actually should be more investment in the Defence Force. We think there should be at least 2% GDP, especially with the way the world is going currently.
Mm.
But they did increase the wages because they've got a huge attrition problem.
Yep.
And I think that was very fair, and it is deserving. So I'm going to go with that.
That's interesting.
There could be other policies that I might agree with. That's probably top of my head. I also just had the annual review.
Yeah, of course.
Because I sit on the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee. So I think that was well deserved and something that the Labor government did do.
Brilliant. It's the first time we've had that one, but I think a fairly valid one. So there we go. Well, there we go. So, Laura Trask, MP, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much.